Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast was originally recorded in 1993 and is with Dr. Jennifer Crocker, former professor of psychology at SUNY Buffalo, and Dr. Roy F. Baumeister, former E.B. Smith professor in liberal arts at Case Western Reserve University. We hope you enjoy today's podcast, and don't forget to subscribe to get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Self-esteem is one of the buzzwords that we hear all the time these days. It's discussed in educational circumstances and discussed in therapy. The state governments are discussing it as possibly a solution to a lot of problems. So the first issue, how important is this maintaining self-esteem?
Well, I guess I would say that self-esteem is not very important for a lot of things that people think it's important for. It doesn't really explain very much of our behavior and how successful people actually are. But in another level, it's extremely important because self-esteem has a very big effect on how happy people are,
right,
how satisfied with their lives they are.
Yes. So there's this huge subjective aspect, even though the objective indicators, I think all this idea that it's going to be the magic bullet or the social vaccine was the term they were using in California, that if we could get everyone's self-esteem raised, it would solve crime and teen pregnancy, and even saying it would solve the budget deficit. the research data don't support that. The links are quite weak. And the idea that self-esteem is the cause is even more dubious. I mean, to the extent there is some link between low self-esteem and addiction, it makes perfect sense for self-esteem to be a consequence if you're living a life as a drug addict. So the idea that changing self-esteem will solve a lot of social problems, I think, is wrong and is oversold. But I think you're absolutely right. It does make people happier, does make them feel better, and it just gives them more confidence to go through and undertake things. And so there are a lot of benefits. Going along with some of these subjective things, you mentioned happiness as a strong link to depression. Low self-esteem is significantly correlated with depression. In fact, Tennant's research suggests that a lot of the effects of depression, a lot of correlates showed with it, are really due to low self-esteem, and that if statistically you control for the self-esteem, depression doesn't produce those things.
Right, right. And in fact, low self-esteem is a risk factor for suicide. So in its extreme forms, low self-esteem is a very serious problem for people.
Mm-hmm. My sense with the suicide literature was particularly losses of self-esteem that are problematic. Mm-hmm. That when you're changing toward a more negative view of yourself, temporary things that deflate your self-esteem more even than the chronic sense, that seems to be what's about. And that kind of gets us to the theme we want to talk about of maintaining self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
You can go through with an unfavorable opinion of yourself. Maybe you're not too smart. You might as well know that. That doesn't mean you're going to kill yourself. But it's those times when you're dropping, when you thought you were smart, and now you're finding out that you're not, or you're not as successful, or not as attractive, or not as desirable a romantic partner, or whatever. All those changes for the worse, those losses of self-esteem, those are the worst things. And so that's when the need to maintain it becomes really strong. Let me see what you think about this one. And I edited that book on self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to put all the findings that yourself and plenty of other the leading researchers had done. It seemed to me that the threat of losing self-esteem was sort of the number one motive or the number one thing people want to avoid. Mm-hmm. Gaining self-esteem, rising, thinking of yourself better, people are a little bit, that's nice, but they're not as eager to do that. And there are some negative consequences. People are a little nervous about rising too much, and people will expect more of me, or I'll have to live up to higher standards, and so on. So there's some desire to rise and find out you're better than you thought. There's also some desire to kind of stay the same. But what they agree on is they don't want to lose.
That's
the number
right.
one thing is no loss
That's
of self-esteem.
Right. A lot of people have fears that they might not be as good as they think they are, or
yes.
hope they are, or want to be. And one of the things people really care about is avoiding information that confirms their worst fears about themselves.
Avoiding information that confirms the worst fears. Yeah, I could see that would do it. Because Ogilvy and some of those others, that people kind of carry around an idea of their worst self. and it's very individually tailored to them. It's, you know, mm-hmm. we all don't want to find out that we're incompetent and unattractive and so on. But people have very specific ideas about what's wrong with them mm-hmm. or what might be, you know, your own worst nightmare about yourself. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And anything that suggests that, that sets people off. I'm reminded in this connection too, Kernis's work on who are the bullies, who are the violent, aggressive people, how does that tie into self-esteem? Well, you know, we have generations of theories, but what he finds is people with high self-esteem, but unstable, vulnerable, mm-hmm. insecure high self-esteem. It's right. sort of the insecure egomaniac. That's the dangerous person. That's you want to watch out for,
right.
whether it's Saddam Hussein or whatever.
Those kinds of people seem to need to constantly produce evidence that they're in fact okay.
Right.
And one way they have to do that is, or one way they may be able to do that is by beating up somebody else or proving that they're better than somebody
right.
else. But some people who have, they do seem to have high self-esteem, but they seem to constantly need to reassure themselves of that
right.
fact or
right.
produce evidence of that
yes,
fact.
Yes, it's the insecure high, because mm-hmm. we all know people who have secure high self-esteem who just think they're terrific.
Right.
And, you know, they're not defensive or not going through life jumping at every slight or getting ready to fight a duel or
right. nothing much can
anything.
Shake their positive
yes,
view of
right,
themselves.
Yeah.
They just shrug things off.
Yes, and even you know, in the studies we do, where you tell them you failed really badly at this, they say, "Oh well,
it was a stupid test."
Yes, it was a stupid test, or well, you did it wrong, or I'm good at lots of other things. And so we had one study where we were trying to study the effects of failure, and so we gave people a test and then by random assignment told them they'd succeeded or failed. And one person with high self-esteem, and we told him, "Well, I guess you're just really not very good at this." He said, "Oh, it must be one of the few things I'm not good at."
That's great.
Right. So.
And it can't be very important if I'm not good at it.
Right. Yes, that's another one. Yes. So people with high self-esteem who are secure, you know, they don't have any problem maintaining it. They seem to be quite handy with it. It's the insecure highs who become violent and defensive. But the ones who are kind of on the edge, the ones more at risk, are people with low self-esteem and people who are vulnerable in some other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of brings up the issue of who are these populations who are especially vulnerable, one major one being groups where society sends you a message that
right.
you're inferior.
Right.
And that's always been a problem throughout the history of the world. People, society parcels out its rewards, and it has its financial rewards, and its quality of life rewards, and also has its prestige rewards.
Right.
And
right.
allows some people, just tells you are a superior human being. And so, oh, great, I'm superior. Yeah. But to do that, it has to tell other people that you're inferior.
Mm-hmm.
And so issues of prejudice and discrimination and social messages of inferiority, these become burdens that significant parts of the population have to bear. We see it in America, you know, the sensitive issue is the racial prejudice, mm-hmm. also gender prejudice. You know, that's just the current form of it. It's always existed in some form in most societies.
And it even goes beyond prejudice based on race or gender, but even mm-hmm. People who are too heavy are
right.
victims of prejudice.
Yes, I would say actually in terms of discrimination now, the worst victims are the overweight and homosexuals, because there people will still be very explicit in discriminating against them. There you'll have employers saying, "I won't hire a fat person," you know, the kind of thing. Not that racial prejudice isn't still a serious problem, it
right.
certainly is.
But at least
People have to be somewhat tolerant, and the laws mm-hmm. are in place, and they have legal mm-hmm. safeguards and so on. As the you know, homosexuals are afraid to call the police when somebody attacks them, because they say, "Well, the police will come and beat yeah. us up too."
Right, right.
So we do have a number of populations who get this message from society. Now, this sort of brings us to one of the core issues. What is it like to live in a society when society is sending you this message that you're inferior? Social scientists have been theorizing about this for decades and saying that, well, you just have low self-esteem and you try to bear up the best you can mm-hmm. and so on. But your research, the paper that won that prize, really dropped a bombshell on there and pulled everything together and said, actually, they don't seem to be
it's
suffering.
Not true.
It's
yeah.
not true, yes,
yeah.
that there's no deficit in self-esteem, that For instance, blacks have, if anything, slightly higher self-esteem than white people on average. Most studies are equal, right? And
Equal or higher.
Equal or higher. Women versus men, women get...
Women don't have the terrible low self-esteem that many people assume
right.
they do and,
right.
and must.
Right, that it's basically equal or very close.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said if you know, you can get a difference to be significant statistically if you have
enough
people, but it's like on a 100-point scale where 100 is the highest self-esteem, it might be 58 to 57.
Right.
It's a very
right.
tiny difference in self-esteem. So basically, all these groups that supposedly are coping with this message that society telling them they're inferior, they're not believing it, they're not buying it. Somehow they're managing to maintain their self-esteem.
Right. I would be careful to say not all groups, because some
that's true.
People
yes.
who are members of groups that are discriminated against really do suffer as
right.
a result of
okay.
that. But certainly many, many groups that are the targets of prejudice and discrimination
mm-hmm.
don't show these terrible low levels of self-esteem that a lot
mm-hmm.
of psychological theory suggests
right.
they ought to have.
And it's not just a matter of one kind of test or measurement or something, because I mean, you reviewed all the literature and there must have been 20 or 30 different self-esteem measures
right.
that were used in these studies.
Right.
It's however you measure it, you find the same thing.
That's right. It's been shown over and over again now
yes.
for many, many different groups, many racial and ethnic groups. One interesting finding, some people have suggested that maybe this is an American phenomenon, that maybe
mm-hmm.
in America the culture is, or the culture among some stigmatized groups is, we refuse to have low self-esteem.
Right.
We refuse
we
to say anything
yes.
bad about ourselves. But this has even been replicated in Europe. For example, Dutch children in the Netherlands
mm-hmm.
show, even though that, Turkish children in the Netherlands, who are a very oppressed and
yes.
stigmatized group,
yes.
Show levels of self-esteem equal to or sometimes higher than those mm-hmm. of Dutch children in the Netherlands. So it's not a phenomenon that's isolated to the United
okay.
States.
Right. So that's just a shock to this whole, we've been devising explanations for a phenomenon that doesn't really exist
right.
For
right.
so long. So then that brings up the interesting question, how or why is this true? How do they maintain their self-esteem? Because we have to say society is sending the message to some degree.
That's right.
There may be a mixed message, there may be positive things too, but there's no denying there. The culture has,
mm-hmm.
in its history, sent out negative messages. So how do people maintain the self-esteem? How do they manage to shrug these off?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that people can do to kind of protect themselves from this negative message
mm-hmm.
that they're not worth as much or not
mm-hmm.
valued as much. One of the things that people can do is to say, those things that I'm not getting, I don't
mm-hmm.
care about very much. So, for example, women who aren't achieving at the highest levels of
mm-hmm.
in corporate America, for example,
mm-hmm.
might say, that's not what's really important to me, or high
right.
levels of pay are not what's really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
What really matters to me is to have a job where I can choose my own hours, or where I like
or
my coworkers.
Feel helpful, or
right.
yes.
So one strategy is to devalue the things you don't get
mm-hmm.
As a result of your membership in that group. Another strategy is to...
Let's talk about that one a little
okay,
bit for a
sure.
moment. It's something of a dangerous game to play, because
mm-hmm.
if you devalue the things that the mainstream culture values, you say, oh, well, you know, if it's basketball or something, well, that's not going to be a major cost. I'm thinking of, you know, Asians coming over here and they really haven't made serious inroads in the National Basketball Association.
Right.
And I don't think that's really hurting them in any way. But, you know, things like school achievement or education are things that really do lead to wealth. It does kind of cut you off then from the society
right.
to turn your back on significant aspects of it. So it's a risky strategy. It's one that can be.
Yes, it's a double-edged sword, because
yeah.
devaluing might protect your self-esteem but undermine your motivation to
mm-hmm.
achieve in that area of your life.
Yes.
And so it can undercut school
mm-hmm.
achievement, all kinds
yes.
of efforts to succeed in an area.
Yes, that's interesting. You put it that way. One thing in this whole discussion of self-esteem that's kind of missed is that all these things people do to protect their self-esteem or maximize
right.
it, they often have this self-defeating aspect, and that people will do things to save their face or to save self-esteem
mm-hmm.
that are self-destructive in a variety of ways,
or at least have some cost.
Yes.
For them. Yeah.
Right. as our society pushes. We just had a paper published on, you know, it was not on any special group or anything, it was just people with high self-esteem would respond to a threat to their self-esteem in this very macho, overconfident way, that they would take on too much and thus get themselves into a very costly situation, end up losing more money, performing more poorly, mm-hmm. Because they don't manage themselves in order just to respond to that immediate threat as soon as someone cast a hint about them that, you're not very good and so on. They responded in such an extreme way. And, the phenomenon of self-handicapping, that people mm-hmm. don't want to fail, so they don't try, they don't put themselves on the line. The student, the underachiever in school who says, well, if I knock myself out and get a C, everybody's going to know I'm stupid. But if I kind of goof off and get a C, mm-hmm. People will say,
he should try. Yeah. He's an underachiever.
Yes, and that's much more comforting. Right. So there are these self-defeating things, and if our society umps the ante on self-esteem, we may see more of the negative consequences mm-hmm. of self-esteem protection. But anyway, just
digression.
A bit of a digression. So the one strategy is to devalue things, but it does at the risk of cutting yourself off mm-hmm. From what the culture values. And, you know, really to get to the top, you not only have to embrace the values and live by them, you have to fight like hell.
Right.
And you know, you mentioned women not making it to the top. Well, most men don't make it to the top of the mm-hmm. Those things either. And the ones who do sort of had to fight. And mm-hmm. once you have a whole category of people who are sort of saying, well, that's not for us, then that as a community may suffer some consequences mm-hmm. for that. All right, what's another strategy people use?
Well, another strategy is to avoid comparing yourself with
yes.
people who are in an advantage group, mm-hmm. the people who are kind of the top dogs mm-hmm. in the society, mm-hmm. and restrict your comparisons to people who are like you, so people who are facing the same disadvantages.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we don't look at Albert Einstein and Madonna and, you know, and compare ourselves to mm-hmm. them and say, oh, I'm really not making it.
Right.
But just we say, well, considering other people like us, we were born the same time mm-hmm. and had the same difficulties and so on, well, we're doing pretty well. And in disadvantaged groups, you see, particularly even mm-hmm. if the whole group is discriminated against, and so the whole group has lower income than the mainstream, you can still be doing better than other people within the group.
Right, right.
And this choice, because self-esteem is kind of a relative thing, right? In my Meanings of Life book, it's like the need to self-worth is a need to feel superior to somebody.
Right.
And so you got to find somebody and choose your targets effectively.
Right. And so if you're in a group that's discriminated against and disadvantaged and not doing well economically, it's going to make you feel terrible if you're constantly comparing yourself with mm-hmm. the people who are
the most successful
or the
right.
most attractive or the
yes.
otherwise advantaged.
Yes.
Yeah.
But compared to other people in the same boat, I'm doing better, one says. And in that way, you can maintain high self-esteem without, you know, despite objectively being at all kinds of disadvantages. Mm-hmm. So that's an important one, too. And what else? I think there were three.
Another strategy people can use to protect their self-esteem is when something negative does happen to them in their lives, they can say, this happened to me because the other person is prejudiced against me, because
right.
of discrimination, because of prejudice.
Yes.
And that's an explanation that members of advantaged groups in society don't have available to them.
Right. So that's, you were saying that in some measures, black people have higher self-esteem than white people, and that could be one explanation why. We all fail, we all get rejected, we all go mm-hmm. through this, and you know, if you're an advantaged group and you fail, well, this kind of reflects on you. You have to keep a stiff upper lip and muddle through. You have nobody else to blame but yourself. Whereas, if you're in one of these groups, you can say, well, it doesn't count because it wasn't fair, because they were out to get me.
Right.
They're prejudiced against me.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that helps is that it places the cause of the negative thing happening on the other person or in something outside of yourself,
right.
rather than having to take personal blame or responsibility for that negative
outcome. Yeah, that's the way people think about causes. They sort of point to one thing, and the big dimension is, is it me, or is it external circumstances?
Right.
And the more things that give you the chance to point to external circumstances, you know, we always use the example of people taking a test and doing badly, and, well, the test was unfair, or there were disadvantages, or I had an earache, or whatever the external circumstance you can point to, then your self-esteem can survive intact. You don't have to lower your opinion of yourself. But if those are screened away and it zeroes in and it's really you, then you're gonna suffer.
Right. There's no avoiding the implication that there's that you're deficient in some way.
Right. Right. I remember shortly after you published that article, there was, I mean, I like to comment on specific cases in the news, but the whole Marion Barry affair in Washington, D.C., that happened, you know, right after you published this article. It seemed prophetic that, I mean, here, certainly being one of the major black mayors, he certainly was going to be watched especially closely, but he was on video taking drugs and in the hotel room with a woman he'd had an affair with and all these things. And yet, what does he say? Is that, well, they're just picking on me out of racial prejudice. Now, you can say that, well, that's something worth trying. Probably most of us in that situation would try that too. But the point is, that is one way of defending self-esteem. And you don't have to say, my career is being ruined because of something I did, because I messed up, because I failed. You can say, they're persecuting me.
I think it's important to keep in mind that for African Americans in this society and for many people, there may be a kernel of truth to that explanation.
I think there has to be more than a kernel, at least by and large. You can't, many, you know, specific cases may or may not have some truth, but if there were no truth to it, if there were no prejudice, the whole thing wouldn't work.
That's right, but prejudice and discrimination are very pervasive, so it's not that it's unrealistic or irrational for people to say, I was discriminated against, I was a target of prejudice.
Right. Yes, it is something that we know that happens and does produce these effects. And so that makes it a viable explanation, a plausible one.
Right.
Only one that people can reach and grab onto when they need something to shield self-esteem from all those little blows that life deals us from day to day. You did some laboratory studies showing how these effects work, that people will or will not attribute their failure.
We had African-American students come into the lab, and they received information that another student was interested in becoming friends with them, or that the other student was not interested in becoming friends with them. And they always thought that the other student was white. But for half of the students, they thought that the other person knew their race, and that makes an attribution to prejudice possible. And the other half of the African-American students thought that the white student did not know their race, which makes an attribution to prejudice very implausible, difficult to generate. How can a person be prejudiced against you if they don't even know what your race is?
Right.
And what we found was that when the students were rejected by the white evaluator,
There's the threat to your self-esteem.
There's a threat to
Somebody
self-esteem.
Somebody knows something about you and rejects you.
That's right. And when they were rejected, if they thought the other person was aware of their race, it didn't hurt their self-esteem at all.
Right.
And they attributed that rejection to prejudice.
Right.
But when the other person couldn't know their race, and so it was very difficult to attribute the rejection to prejudice, their self-esteem suffered.
Okay. So you're getting exactly the same evaluation, exactly the same blow to your self-esteem. And in one case, if you can attribute it, if you can plausibly say that this must be racially motivated, then your self-esteem survives intact.
That's right.
But the same threat, the same everything, only the race attribution is not plausible, then their self-esteem does suffer. So it's not like they have some kind of magic imperviousness or that their rejection doesn't affect them. It does.
Right.
But if you can discount it and say, well, it's just racial prejudice, just forget it.
That saves your self-esteem.
I think that's really important, and that kind of sheds light on a lot of things that scholars are talking about and debating in terms of race relations and various intergroup relations in the United States. Claude Steele, a very good social psychologist both of us know, has been studying on the the difficulties that, that black students have in these predominantly white mm-hmm. colleges, and you know, at all levels of intelligence and achievement and so on, they have a higher dropout rate. They're more dissatisfied, and you think, these are the people we most want. These are like, you mm-hmm. know, the heroes of race relations, producing integration and helping everybody. You know, why should they suffer so? But they're made to feel like traitors, and they say the black community, they feel that it's pulling them backward and putting pressure on them not to succeed by the culture standards. On the face of that, that seems so self-defeating. Why would any black people want to make some rising, wealth accumulating, achieving black person feel bad? But it does threaten your defense, your self-esteem mm-hmm. defense, because you're telling yourself that the society is loaded against me, and that I can't succeed because of things beyond my control, because mm-hmm. of racial prejudice. But if somebody else comes along and succeeds, that really questions that defense. So it does. It's a very sad situation, a very right. tragedy, really, of that portion of the black right. community, that the success of some constitutes a self-esteem threat to the others.
Mm-hmm. I think thinking of the situation of black students in predominantly white universities, they're maybe triple jeopardy, because probably if they fail, they run the risk of confirming other people's negative mm-hmm. stereotypes about mm-hmm. them. Not only that, but they may also run the risk of confirming their fears about themselves. But at some level, these pervasive stereotypes in the culture that blacks are intellectually inferior to whites may make some black students feel less sure that they're yes. bright and gifted, even with the yes. same level of performance that white students have.
Right.
There may be
it's
just
a possibility
this,
lurking right, in the back of your
uncertainty,
mind, even if you don't believe it. Yeah.
Right, a little bit of uncertainty. And so for them, the risk of actually failing is very great. I
mean, yes.
We were talking about the lengths that people will go to protect their self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And these black students, I mean, they don't want it, they run the risk if they fail, not only confirming other people's negative views about them, which is unpleasant in mm-hmm. itself, but also confirming perhaps
their own yes.
fears or anxieties
yes.
about themselves in that situation. And then, as you mentioned, if they succeed, they may run the risk of being given a hard time by their peers who
yes.
feel like it's betrayal if you're
yes.
too successful in a white world, then you're somehow not being black enough.
Yes.
So.
Yes, and it's so frustrating. I mean, even to the sort of the liberal white establishment that wants race relations to be good and wants everyone to succeed, and he wants all the opportunities, and say, well, we do all this and we bring these people in and give them the opportunities and we're trying mm-hmm. to help, and then their peers give them a hard time. How can we what can we do about that?
Right.
It's it must be extremely frustrating.
Well, I think another issue that Steele's research raises that's also very consistent with things that we've done is one of the things that we found in the laboratory experiment that I described is one of the most surprising things was what happened when the black students got positive feedback from the white evaluator.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is that when they got positive feedback from someone who was aware of their race, they attributed the positive feedback to their race. It was as if they were thinking, that person is only saying they like me, is only
yes.
pretending to like me because mm-hmm. I'm black, and they don't want to appear to be prejudiced. And so they didn't feel good. In fact, their self-esteem dropped when they got that
wow.
positive feedback from
positive
somebody.
Positive feedback makes your self-esteem drop. That's awfully sad.
Right, because they couldn't trust it. Because
yeah.
they know that not only are many white people prejudiced against them, but many white people are afraid to be prejudiced against them and will do things
yes.
that are positive, that, mm-hmm. but only because they're black, not because
yes.
they really deserve it. So they're kind of really caught between a rock and a hard
yeah.
place.
It sort of writes the there's a segment of black community, the very most successful, which is kind of starting to resent affirmative action.
Right.
Because it takes away the credit. I mean, basically
right.
what you're doing is you're attributing everything to race. Well, that takes away the blame and the onus of failure, but it also takes away the credit for success.
Right.
And they say, you know, well, I'm really smart and I worked really hard and I achieved all this. And people kind of say, well, you probably just got it because it was a quota
because,
set aside
right,
for
your
you
race or some special program.
How demoralizing that must be, yes.
And again, the reason this triggered this line of thought for me is that Steele's study also suggests that one of the things that may be very well intended but has negative consequences is that a lot of remedial programs for African American students, they're intended to help them succeed and ensure success. But if you think about it, those programs are having a variety of negative effects. It's giving them unsolicited, in many cases, unsolicited help. At some colleges and universities, every African American student is required to be in a remedial program, whether they need it or not.
Yeah.
That kind of unsolicited help may again undermine their self-esteem.
Right.
It's like having a positive outcome happen strictly because of your race.
So it guarantees you can't make it on your own.
We
all assume that you couldn't possibly succeed.
And it sort of sets up the opposite of a self-handicapping situation where it's saying, okay, you have no excuses for failure here. If you're in our remedial program and you're getting all this special attention and all these special programs, the only thing that failure can mean is that you're inadequate.
Yes.
Or it can mean you're inadequate and your entire race is also inadequate. I mean, it's this very heavy burden. So it's not surprising that many African-American students find themselves kind of withdrawing from mainstream academic values and saying, I just don't care so much, because they need to find some way to protect their self-esteem. Everybody does badly once in a while.
Right.
So they need to have some cushions available.
You can't really win, and there's a lot to lose. And so withdrawal kind of becomes the way the way of coping.
Right.
One more implication of this line of work for me is the relations between, say, the poor black community and, you know, the Korean community or some of the other Asians, where there's been a lot of friction. We recently had riots where there was special hostility and tension between these groups, and I could never understand that either. But I think putting the self-esteem thread, putting that as a context, that really puts in perspective and helps explain. Because again, it's the same thing. The belief, you protect your self-esteem by saying, the system is loaded against me, that there are a handful of people who have the money and the power and the influence, and they're not going to share with anybody else who's not just like them. And so, well, we can't be expected to be too successful. And so, you know, it's not a nice way to live, but your self-esteem is intact there. But then along come these Asians and manage to succeed. That really threatens that defense, and that really, again, is a very palpable, a very upsetting thing to witness. And so, you know, some of the tension between those groups, and you know, both mutually negative, a lot of hostility and a lot of negative stereotypes between them. But it may be because of, you know, the negotiation of self-esteem and the defensive strategy and the threat to it, that the one success really does threaten the other, which you don't see if you just look at the economic aspect and say, well, what are the money? It's should be better off, but now their self-esteem is very much the currency of this.
There have been many immigrant groups in this country that have come in very disadvantaged and have managed to become more economically successful over time.
Mm-hmm.
And African Americans in this country seem to be kind of stuck at the bottom of the ladder in many ways. And so, I mean, it's doubly threatening to be on the bottom and for other groups to come in and show that it's possible to be successful. I think it's one thing you have to remember is that the situation is very different for these different groups.
Right.
African Americans have been oppressed.
They didn't come over with their dreams.
That's right. African Americans have been oppressed in this country for hundreds of years, and they're a highly visible group, so it's easy to identify.
Yes. And the Irish and the Eastern Europeans and all those who were very strongly stereotyped and discriminated against and everything, they eventually look like everybody else and they intermarry and you sort of lose track of who they are. But the lack of interracial marriage is a serious problem for producing that integration and that acculturation. Let's think a little bit about other vulnerable groups. I don't want to go too far in it, but another one that has to struggle to maintain self-esteem against threat is the people with low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I just put this book together and read all the findings about people with low self-esteem, and most of them are not really terribly low. It's not like they despise themselves.
Right.
It's really a lack of something positive not a presence of something negative in majority of cases. I mean, we all think we have these faults and so on, but I mean, you look at the global, the way a person thinks of himself, mm-hmm. some people think they're just great at a lot of things, and some people don't have that positive view. There are right. very few who are convinced that they're horrible people, that they're wicked or incompetent or stupid. They will say that, but it's often a sort of manipulative thing. And so I like, again, Claude Steele's argument that these people lack a resource and that mm-hmm. to get through life, to deal with these threats to your self-esteem, which again happen to all of us, romantic rejection or failure, or we scientists, even you must have an experiment doesn't work now and then. Uh-huh. I certainly have plenty of papers rejected and all these things. So if you draw on your other positive beliefs about yourself, mm-hmm. that kind of helps you cope in a positive way. And people with low self-esteem are vulnerable because they don't have all this positive stuff to draw on. So again, what kinds of things do they do? One conclusion we came to is that they just sort of adopt a self-protective orientation. And whereas people with high self-esteem are looking for ways that they can win and they can succeed and mm-hmm. they can find opportunities to shine, people with low self-esteem aren't looking for those. They're watching out for disaster.
Right.
And they're trying to make plans to avoid. So, you know, in terms of getting up and performing in public or something, well, a person with high self-esteem, well, I got to get up and perform in public. That's the way I'll get fans, or I'll convince people I'm great and so on. That's a strategy for winning. Mm-hmm. But the low self-esteem is concerned with not losing. And so getting up in front of people and on stage and singing or speaking right. or whatever, there are too many dangers of things going wrong. They're not thinking about the positive benefits.
Right. In fact, I think people who are very high in self-esteem are just convinced that they have many wonderful qualities. Even if they admit that they have a few not so great qualities, those usually are things that are not terribly important to them. Mm-hmm. And they not only think they have these positive qualities, but they're very certain of it. And I think that certainty helps mm-hmm. them deal with negative information in their lives. If someone says, "You're not that smart," they know they're smart, so they brush that off.
Yeah.
But low self-esteem people, even when they have positive self-concepts, they don't hold those self-concepts with as high certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they can't say, "Oh, you're wrong.
Right.
I am too smart."
They say, "Well, maybe you're right."
Oh, yes. What?
Yeah.
And that's, then that has that dose of anxiety going through
right.
the system, and the self-doubt start in. And then if they have to sit down and take a test, they're still worrying about it. They
right.
haven't brushed it off.
Right. Not only that, but I think high self-esteem people are also certain that they don't have important negative qualities,
mm-hmm.
whereas low self-esteem people are not sure that they don't have these negative qualities.
Right.
And if you might say, you know, are
yes.
you stupid? They would say no, but there might be an element of uncertainty.
Yeah,
or
I might not be smart enough. Or
are
I
you
could
really
be
attractive?
Stupid. Yeah.
No. Yes, I'm attractive,
yeah.
but I'm not completely sure of that. And so as a result, they have fears.
Yes.
That they're negative things that they really don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the feared self that Hazel Marcus talks
yes.
about. Fears that they really don't want to believe
yes.
some things are true about them. They nonetheless feel like they're in some danger of finding mm-hmm. out that those things really are true.
Right.
And so as a result, they feel very anxious in evaluative situations, yes. as you pointed out in one of your review
yeah.
papers. And their orientation is to make sure they don't find out those negative things.
Right. Because the fears also create these vulnerabilities.
Right.
And that you can really be thrown off and be upset and all
mm-hmm.
these things can happen to you. So that's what they struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's clear self-esteem is one of the important things that people want. Not so much that it solves all of life's problems or that it makes you do better objectively in lots of ways. It has some effects maybe, but not big ones. But subjectively, to get through life and to feel better and to cope with setbacks that we all get and to just to be happy and avoid depression and so on, self-esteem is extremely central, important for that. And so maintaining self-esteem becomes mm-hmm. very important. And people have all these many strategies to do it, but
mm-hmm.
For some groups it's particularly hard. And in some ways the impressive thing is how resourceful people are in many of these
right.
ways at maintaining their self-esteem. Well, thank you for joining us.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.